Hello, everybody, and indeed, this is me, Sammy Shah, right here behind the microphone and behind the steering wheel. It's October the 4th, 2015, and I am coming to you shortly after, I think, what, 2 days after I posted the last episode, only because I feel bad about how shitty the last episode was. It really was fucking terrible, and I apologize profusely for that. It just is one of those days where I had nothing really to talk about, and my mind was kind of a blank, and I'd record a podcast because I figured, like, oh, I should always do one every Wednesday or Thursday, that way I can get it out to you guys in a timely fashion, and build a schedule, and I forced one out. I normally don't force them out, but that one was definitely duller than even this introduction, which has now already bored the shit out of you guys. But no, I'm going to make it up to you. This is going to be an entertaining podcast, I promise. Thank you for sticking around. For those of you who didn't and who bailed after listening to the shit show that was the last episode, I completely understand. Nobody will judge you for that. I will not hold you accountable in any way, shape, or form. And I endorse your decision. Oh boy, it is nighttime. It's 11:14 p.m. I am driving back from Perth to Northam after a gig, as per usual. And it's been a good day. It's been a good weekend, actually. It's a Sunday right now, and it's been a busy weekend. Had lots to do, lots going on. The BBC thing worked out really well. Obviously, I told you guys about that. The response has been fantastic, so now I'm working on other projects. And I went and saw The Martian. I went and did that. I went to the cinema. I don't get to go to the cinema very often. There is no cinema in Northam. There's no movie theater there. There is a store that still sells VHS tapes and rents VHS tapes because Northam, as you all know, the town I live in, is trapped in 1953. Although, I don't know, did that VHS tapes in 1953? Was it 1953 when it was like Betamax and stuff? But anyway, so they don't have that stuff there. So I don't get to go to the cinema very often. Like, the only time I get to go is if I'm in Perth and I'm not working, which is very rare because I only come to Perth for gigs most of the time, or with Anya or something. I don't get to watch an adult movie very often. So I went, I booked The Martian. It was a Sunday. I have the day off to myself. So I was like, I'm going to do this. I drove down all the way. I got the giant tub of buttered popcorn. I dug, you know, cut a hole through the bottom, stuck my dick through that, hoping for a hand job. Then I realized that, no, wait, I'm at this movies alone. and I got a Coke. And I sat down. And I went alone. Like, my friends always like, why do you go alone to the movies? I don't understand why you would fucking go to the movies with anyone. Ever. I never understand that. Why would you not just go alone? Like, the whole point of the movie to the cinema is to watch the movie, right? Like, who... Like, I guess if you're, like, in a dating or if you're in a relationship or something, you want to go and you want to make out and fondle each other while the movie's playing. But then... And maybe if you're teenagers and you're lacking places to go to make out, I understand that. But if you're just grown-ups, like, I want to watch the movie. I don't want someone bothering me when I'm watching the movie. Like, my attention is on the movie. And so even when I go with friends or I go with anyone else, if they talk during the movie, if they have any comments to make, if they breathe too loudly, it will take me out of the cinematic experience. I want to be there. The ideal situation for me would be me alone in a cinema and just watching that giant screen all by myself. That would be the best thing, but that doesn't ever happen. Although I think the last time that happened was actually when I was in Dubai at the age of, oh god damn, how old was I at the time? 15, maybe 16, when the movie came out. It was the movie Seven, and that had come out, and it was playing in the cinema, and we were staying at the Grand Hyatt Regency in Hotel in Dubai, and my dad had some work there, so we'd taken the whole family there. We all gone. And we stayed there, and there was an ice skating rink downstairs, and I used to go ice skating, and I actually met a girl while ice skating, and that was like the first girl, I think the second girl I ever kissed in my entire life. Was this girl that I met at the ice skating rink when I was like 15 or 16 years old, and we used to go ice skating together every day, and I became a fucking good ice skater because for 1 week I did that for like hours and hours and hours, and just to impress her. And then, but I didn't take her to the movies with me. Fuck that shit. I went alone even then my priorities were right. Like, my priorities were focused. I went to the movies, and Seven was playing, and I went in the Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman movie, David Fincher's like major directorial kind of attention. The one he did after Aliens 3, I think, his first proper movie. And I walked in and I got a ticket, and I was the only one in the entire cinema for that entire film. And I remember, like, that is one visceral fucking experience, watching Seven alone in a cinema. Because it's not like, it's not horror movie scary, but it definitely gets under your skin, and you spend a lot of time flinching at phantom fingers touching your shoulders from behind. Like, that's what it felt like. I think that was the movie which I saw that, and it really, for the first time, woke me up to the importance of, like, editing in movies and stuff. So that, yeah, for Seven in the cinema alone, that was a great experience. And that, I think in my head, that's always kind of lived as the ideal way to watch, you know, anything in the cinema. I didn't get to do that, but still, I went to see The Martian. It was a pretty empty room. It was pretty cool. There weren't many people, which I would have thought there'd be more, considering what a bestseller it is in terms of the ticket sales and reviews and stuff. And it was good, man. It was fucking good. It held up. I'm not going to review it. I used to do a movie review show in Pakistan for a long time. I think we did like 120 episodes of that on TV called Cutting It. It was me and a friend, Mariam Shah, and I produced it for a while. And before I produced it, this friend of mine, Seher Osman, she produced it for a long time. And then she moved on to other projects and I took over. And it was fun. It was a fun way that you can spend the week watching movies, getting paid to watch movies. It was something I did once. I've done a lot of weird shit now that I think about it. I really have. I've been lucky that way. A lot of people have given me a little bits of money to do whatever the hell I wanted. They never given me a lot of money, but they given me just enough for me to be able to do whatever I wanted for long periods of time, which is something to be very grateful for. So I'm not going to review the movie for you guys, but I will say that it was great. It really was great. I enjoyed the book a hell of a lot. I read the book, I think, twice or thrice when it came out, and I really liked the movie. I think Matt Damon did a great job as usual, and Ridley Scott, like, actually for the first time in a long time, fucking redeemed himself as a phenomenal director. Beautiful, beautiful cinematography and everything, and just fun movie. I cried. Okay, I didn't cry. I choked up. That's what happens. If I watch a movie in the cinema, I choke up. And not at sad movies, by the way. If it's a sad movie, like with the, oh, now you're going to cry scene, like someone important dies or something, doesn't faze me that much. I think my cynicism kicks in then. But if it's a movie with just, you know what, if it's a movie where things work out, where people try hard and things work out, and there's that moment where, like, everyone in the movie is cheering as the hero survives, overcomes. When people overcome shit, I lose my fucking mind. I cry, I bawl my eyes out. Not in the cinemas, though. In the cinemas, I can control myself so that I kind of get choked up, and that's all it gets to. But if it's on a plane, I am losing it. I am a mess. I don't know what it is, what kind of repressed issues come out when I'm on an airplane. I have no idea why, but man, do I weep on airplanes. I really do. Like, it's a weird thing. I remember, like, there's two other comedians, like Ben Sutton and Mike G in Perth. There's two WA Australia-based comedians that I was talking to, and they had the same thing, and then no one else did. None of the other guys we spoke to, no women I know do that. It's just like, yeah, it's just a thing where I don't know why, but something about the air pressure up there. And there's a kind of, I think there's an abdication of personal responsibility when you're on a plane, because nothing is in your control now. It's all out of your control. Your fate lies in the hands of the pilot, his expertise, the expertise of the people maintaining the aircraft, and physics, the laws of thermodynamics and those kind of things. And so, you know, you kind of relax and let go of the burdens of responsibility that you normally carry with you, and you're more emotionally raw, I think. And I watch movies on planes. I cry, man. I remember I was flying from Perth to Karachi 2.5 years ago for a personal visit for some work I had back there, and it was an emotional trip anyway, because there's some stuff going on back in Karachi that I had to go for, and I'd been dealing with the emotional stuff the way I normally do, which is you repress it and you push it down until it comes out as a tumor or a boil or you know, something cancerous a few years from now probably. But I got on the plane, and The Descendants, the George Clooney movie set in Hawaii, was playing on the screen, and I started watching that and just punching the chair in front of me because I was crying so hard. Just weeping openly. I don't know what it is. And I've done that so many times. It's weird. It's embarrassing. Yeah, planes, I have that weird relationship with planes. It's still better than my previous relationship with planes, which is where now I go on a plane genuinely looking forward to the cathartic experience of weeping as I watch a movie. I used to get on planes worried about boners. Worried about popping an erection. Because I... Fuck it. Let's tell you guys this story. I promise I'd make this podcast more interesting than the last one. I lost my virginity on a plane. I did. My first time ever was joining the Mile High Club. And that happened. That was in a long time ago. A long, long time ago. And I was going to college. I was flying from Pakistan. I was back in Pakistan for holidays, flying back to America for, you know, classes to resume. And I met a girl on the plane, and it was a long flight because it used to be Karachi to Bahrain, which is, I think, 5 hours, then a 7 hour to 10 hour stopover in Bahrain, then Bahrain to London, which was another 5 hours, and then a 7 hour to 10 hour stopover in Bahrain, in London, and then London to Washington, D.C., Dulles International Airport, which is, I think, 10 hours or 12 hours, something insane like that. And so I met this girl on the flight from Karachi to Bahrain. She and I started talking because we were seated next to each other and we just started chatting and we got along. Sorry about that. And then we reached Bahrain and we really talked in Bahrain for like 7 hours. And that's my sweet spot. Like, if I'm going to a bar or a pub to meet people and there's a girl there or something like that, I've never done well in that situation. Even in college, throughout college, I never did well in those situations because I'm not good in short bursts of conversation. Like, I need 7 hours. You give me 7 hours and I will open up like a fucking flower. It's a horrible analogy. But if you, anything less than that, Sammy Shah is going home alone. And he also calls himself Sammy Shah apparently now. But I was on the plane and in Bahrain Airport, we spoke for 7 hours. And then we got back on the plane and we went all the way to Heathrow. And then Heathrow, and so we talked together the entire time. And then we sat together on the flight all the way to Heathrow. And then we're in Heathrow Airport. We talked. And then we were there for like 10 hours or something. And she went to sleep at one point with the head resting on my shoulder. And I sat there the entire time frozen thinking, oh my God, a head is resting on my shoulder. Is this first base? Was this constitute first base? I don't know what first base is, clearly. And then from Heathrow Airport, from London to Washington, D.C., we had sex on the plane. Went to the toilet and that's how I lost my virginity. That's how I became a man. is at 5,000 feet or whatever the hell a plane flies at, and it was pretty cool. It was interesting. It was very cramped quarters. You'd want your first time to be in slightly less cramped quarters, but also it was one heck of a first time. And then she went on to Chicago, which is where she was studying. I went on to Virginia, which is where I was studying. Then I flew to Chicago a few months later, and we spent a weekend together. And then she was 3 years my senior in college, and so she graduated while I was still at the end of my first year at the time. And she graduated, and she went off to Scotland or someplace to do some master's program. And I wept and wept and wept, and then, as a result, for the longest time, I used to get on planes and I had a Pavlovian response because every time I flew, it reminded me of that, and I'd think of that, and then I'd be sitting there hiding an uncomfortable boner. Like, that was, and it's a weird thing, it's a very painful thing getting an erection on a flight. How are you guys doing? Yeah, too much? Alright, well, you asked for it. Your fault for fucking tuning in. I'm cursing too much. I apologize for that as well. I've had too many Red Bulls. That's what it is. I was sleepy for the drive back, so I had a Red Bull, and now that's buzzing through my system. And the next thing you know, I'm confessing sex stories to you guys. What else should I tell you about? I've got a rant building up. That's what's happening. I've got a rant building up, an angry rant right now that's kind of brewing in my system, because what happened was the Perth Fringe Festival is next year, right? It's in end of Jan, early Feb of every year, and this will be my third Perth Fringe Festival, and I look forward to it, and I love it, and it's just a fun experience. It's the highlight of my year. It really is the highlight of my year. I get to have amazing performances, and I get to hang out with awesome people, and it's just, you get to roam around and just pick up gigs all the day, and you get to meet cool friends, and, you know, I met a lot of cool comedians that I'm good friends with now at the last Perth Fringe Festivals, and it really is a sense of community. But the reason I enjoy it is because there is, the way the Fringe Festival works is, right, so the Fringe Festival is run by the Perth Fringe people, and they have their own venues, a few venues that they've got, which are obviously have the prime locations and the best, you know, advertising and all that stuff. Then there's peripheral venues, which are run by private organizations and companies. So the one I always go with is Noodle Palace, which is, it used to be run by a friend of mine named Thomas Ford, and he invited me on board 3 years ago, and since then I've been to them ever since, because they take care of me, and they take a larger cut from the money, but it's worth it, because they really give me big rooms, like 150, 200-seater rooms, and I sell them out for them, and it's a great experience all around. And so, yeah, the Noodle Palace, they run their own rooms there, and there's a bunch of other people, Bootleg Comedy, and they run their own rooms, and everyone, and then there's a Perth Fringe has their own thing. Now, majority of the shows at the Perth Fringe Festival, the main fringe venues, are not stand-up comedy usually. Most of the time, they tend to be either burlesque or cabaret or those kind of things, which are, during these fringe festivals, they're huge. They really are huge. And I it's not my cup of tea, but that's fine. I mean, my personal opinion is that I don't think anyone should ever sit through burlesque unless they're Toulouse-Lautrec in 1930s France or Paris, or and they're doing absinthe, but, you know, whatever. That's if you're going to go watch that, then that's your decision, you know. And it does well. There's a spectacle value to it. Sells a lot of tickets. I get that. That's fine. But every year, man, the Fringe Festival, the main organizers, they shaft stand-up comedy. And it's the same thing for me. It's that same kind of anger I got after, like, attending poetry readings. And after, which wasn't even directed at the poetry reading so much as it was directed towards the literary arts. Like, our writers' festivals I've been to and all that stuff and everything. And seeing the way everyone treats stand-up comedy. Because most of the time, they kind of look down on it as a low art. And I'm fucking done with that, man. This is my tribe. These are my people. This is what I do. I am a stand-up comedian. And the Fringe Festival never gives the stand-up comedians the good rooms. They never give us the good advertising. And fuck you. Like, everyone does that. This shit on stand-up comedy. And I'm fucking tired of it, man. Like, everyone treats stand-up comedy... the only time stand-up comedy enters any cultural zeitgeist beyond, like, someone like Louis C.K. or Jerry Seinfeld or someone, like, you know, there's a few big comedians, obviously, but 90% of the time, stand-up comedy is only in the news because someone made a rape joke, and that's what you're talking about, and that's the only thing people have as a reference point. Oh, like, every time I do literary festivals and stuff, people are like, oh, I don't go to stand-up comedy because, you know, there's too much cursing, and they're too mean and vicious and things, and that's so... You're selling an incredible art form short because of your own narrow fucking mindedness. Like, it's such a strange thing. I'll never understand the snobbery towards that. It happens every year during the Fringe. Because the only reason these Fringe fucking festivals are successful is because of stand-up comedy. Here's what happens. All year round, your cabaret acts and your burlesque acts and your circus freaks and all these fucking guys, they ain't making money. They're not selling shows 5-6 times a week, week in and week out for 12 months of the year. They aren't doing that. They have a precious little fragile dedicated audience base that keeps coming back to them and will only ever be those people. Their audience base doesn't expand, it doesn't spread, it remains the same mentally damaged 30 people coming back again and again and again. Stand-up comedy, man, we go out there, we do club gigs, we do open mics, we do fucking footy clubs, we do corporates, we do everything we can, and we get up there on stage and we make it work, and we're funny, and we work our asses off. Like, I had this thing you know, on Friday, as I was when I recorded the last podcast, I was driving up to do a show at His Majesty's Theatre, right, which is like the biggest theatre and the grandest theatre in Perth. And after that, I was going to run to Lazy Susan's, which is a regular comedy club, my favorite comedy club, but you know, just a comedy club nonetheless, and to do a show there. I was headlining there, and I was doing a 15-minute spot at this at the Majesty's, and I got up at the Majesty's Theatre, and that was a piece of cake. Because the crowds were at those things, that they laugh. It's a theater environment. They're very respectful. They applaud when they have to, and I think any comedian can kind of pull that off. It's not a big deal. And then I went to Lazy Susan's, and it was a packed room, which is a small room but a packed room nonetheless. And it's full of people, and some of them are drunk, and some of them are heckling. And I had that thing where that was the best set I've done as a stand-up comedian to date, because for some reason on that night at that place, my blood was up, and everything I've learned in 10 years of stand-up comedy came to the fore that night, because there was hecklers and they were rough and they were ready to go, and I dealt with them like a fucking professional, and I worked my ass off, man. I did shit there that only other stand-up comedians can do, that nobody else can do. No musician, no poetry reader, no writer, no burlesque dancer, no cabaret singer, no nothing. Nothing. All of their performances, theater actors, everyone, their performances are ruined if a cell phone goes off. There's that thing. I remember a video clip that came out ages ago, which was Hugh Jackman and Daniel Craig, I think, on doing some theatre production in London or New York or someplace. And they're doing some play, and they're on stage, and a woman in the crowd, her phone rings, and like, burr, burr, and Hugh Jackman, maintaining character, goes, are you going to answer that? And there was like a little video clip someone had made of that and put it online. They're like, can you believe how well they handled this? I was like, fuck you, how well they handled it? Have you never seen a stand-up comedian work? Like, if someone disrupts our show, we destroy them. We ruin their lives for generations to come and generations in the past. And we do that shit with words, man. With quick-witted insults and sharp observations and satirical knowledge, and we lacerate you, we whip you, and what we do, no one else can do. When we're done, you know your fucking place, man. It's an amazing art form, because it's the only art form where the audiences a lot of times go in to battle the performers and lose almost every goddamn time. It's an incredible thing to watch. Like, what I did that Friday was, I'm proudest of having done that. All the other things I do are easy compared to what I do on stage at a comedy club. That's me working with all my capacity. I remember when I was in advertising, my friends in advertising used to get angry because I always said advertising is something that only requires 10% of your brain. And I still maintain that. I've never met an advertising executive who I was like, wow, that person is a genius. No, that person is a marginally intelligent, mediocre mind who is in the right place for someone like them, because anyone with genuine intelligence doesn't stay in fucking advertising. And I know I'm being an egotistical asshole when I say this, but yeah, man, I was better than advertising. You know what I'm not better than? Stand-up comedy, man, because that takes all my brain power. That takes every bit, iota of skill and intelligence that I have to offer. And I get to put that on display at a stand-up comedy show. And I do that night after night. And I build up an audience. And I build a fan base. And they come back. And I work hard at not disappointing them. And I write new material. Every year I have a new hour to present. And it's not just me. It's most of the good comedians. And there are many good comedians do that. And you know what? We don't get fucking respect, man. The only reason these Perth Fringe Festivals are successful is because of interstate acts and out-of-country acts and international acts who call us up and say, hey, is the Perth Fringe Festival worth it? And we tell them, yes, it is, because we put our money up and we book rooms and we perform there And we build audiences, and those audiences keep coming back, and then they attend other shows. You know why they're at your shitty burlesque show? Because they came for my stand-up show first, and then they had an evening left to fill after my show was done, so they came to yours after that. They didn't come for your shitty fucking burlesque show. And I'm sorry, I'm going off at burlesque people. Like, I love burlesque dancers. I've got friends who are burlesque dancers, and I understand it's an art form and everything, but I just mean that all these things are treated with a veneration that stand-up comedy deserves but doesn't get. And it drives me insane. It drives me crazy. Like these fringe festivals, great comedians are applying to them. Great comedians. And they're not getting good rooms. Because those rooms are going to some fucking idiot circus guy who'll staple, you know, paper to his nipples and then lie down on a bed of nails. And that's what he'll get the good rooms, whereas we'll get shafted by being sent off to some tiny, godforsaken corner of the festival that's way out of the way. Every year that happens. And despite that, we work hard and we sell out and we put our own money up and we lose money sometimes, and we do that. The same thing happens like at the you know, the Edinburgh Festival. From what I've heard, is it's comedians, it's all kinds of performers, but it's comedians who built that thing up. It's known as a stand-up comedy festival at the end of the day. And comedians are the ones who get fucked. And it kind of drives me insane, because I really take pride in what we do. And I'm sorry, you can say whatever the hell you want about me as a person, but you can't say that I can't differentiate between high art and low art. I know what I'm talking about. I write, I do the art, I spent years studying fine art, and I'm an accomplished artist. I can write prose, I can write poetry, I can write all that shit. I can do those things, and none of them challenge me as much as doing stand-up comedy. Because great stand-up comedy is a wonder to behold. It's an incredible thing. And it's disgusting the way it's looked down upon. So yeah, it's something that's been kind of building up for a while for me. I've been kind of noticing it for ages now, and now I'm just getting angrier and angrier. So like because what happens is I've now gotten to the point where I applied for the Perth Fringe Festival. I applied to Noodle Palace. I'm doing two shows, like you guys know. One of them is a one-man show, which will be slightly more serious. It's still funny, but also more, I hope, thoughtful, called Islamo-Farcist, which is a pun on the word Islamo-Fascist. And anyway, it's a good idea at the time. But it'll be about my relationship with religion and Islam, and how I am now an apostate and why I'm an apostate and all those things, as well as it'll be me debunking and criticizing religion, and it'll also be me debunking and criticizing the critics of religion. That's the hope. While being funny. So that's one show. And that's at Noodle Palace. And it's going to be good. Right? That's locked in. I'm happy with that. The other one is going to be just a straight up stand-up comedy show. My new hour of comedy. And my plan was, I'm going to do that one at, what's it called? At one of the fringe venues. I wanted this place called the Pleasure Garden, which is like the heart of the Perth Fringe Festival. Great, great location. And I've earned it. I'm not gonna lie, it's okay to have a little bit of ego. I work hard, I've earned it, I've done my credentials, and now at the point where I should be able to get that place. And it's got, you know, it's a regular stand-up comedy show. It's called Punching Down. I'm going to have a different opening act every night, just the Perth comedians that I think deserve more focus and attention but aren't getting it for whatever reasons are there. I'm getting all of them to open for me. And it's going to be a great night of comedy, and I'm really looking forward to that. I'm excited about that as well. And yeah, it's called, and that's, I asked for that. I asked for the Pleasure Garden room for that. And instead, they sent me to a bar. They offered me a bar, which is far off in some godforsaken corner of Perth, where nobody is going to attend those shows. And it's going to be just a doomed show and a doomed performance. And the reason being, I found out that they only offer that to other stand-up comedians as well, because they don't know about stand-up comedy, they don't give a shit about stand-up comedy, and it doesn't matter what credentials you put down, it doesn't matter what you say you've done and who you say has reviewed you, for them, stand-up comedy, no one gives a shit. And so now, when I get to do some press next year before my shows, because I'm lucky enough that the press comes and talks to me, because I have friends in the press and stuff, and they know I can fill column inches for them, I'm going to fucking go on a rant. And I'm going to verbally burn this shit to the ground, because I am furious, man. I'm tired of my art form being shit on. I want people to appreciate what comedians do. And I don't think they do that. And I think right now I'm at the point where me yelling at them probably won't make them do that anyway, but god damn it, I need to get the shit off my chest. So anyway, that's been this episode of Sammy Says. I hope you guys found it more entertaining than the last one. Come on, there's sex and violence. What more can you possibly ask for? Hey, by the way, for those of you who haven't yet heard it, my BBC Radio 4 show, A Beginner's Guide to Pakistan, is on Monday, which is tomorrow, October 5th. It is available, or by the way, I'll probably put this up tomorrow anyway. So today, October 5th, it's available as a podcast on the BBC Comedy of the Week podcast. So if you go to iTunes and just do a search for BBC Comedy of the Week, my episode of Beginner's Guide to Pakistan should be the one that's downloadable. You can get that and you can listen to it and marvel at again, what stand-up comedy lets someone do. What it lets someone get away with. And then after that, I will also be, as always, at twitter.com/samishah, facebook.com/samishah.fans, samishah@gmail.com. All of it is S-A-M-I-S-H-A-H. www.samishah.com. These are all places you can find me. Go to iTunes, look for Sami Says, S-A-M-I-S-A-Y-S, and leave a review and a rating. I'd really appreciate that. I love the feedback. Please keep sending it in. I love all of you. Thank you very much. My name is Sami Shah, and this has been Sami Says.